Hey, this is Erin Moran from A Girl Called Eddie, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Jeff Economy of Kingston, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, May 2nd. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Lana Bellamy reports for the Times Union that the owners of the now-shuttered Indian Plant nuclear power plant now say they will discharge radioactive wastewater into the Hudson River in September. A representative from the Holtec International Company said they are delaying the radioactive wastewater release until September so that the company can clean boric acid off the steel liner in the facility. Previously, the company planned to discharge the wastewater into the Hudson this month. Rich Baruni, site vice president for Holtec, said, quote, "I was called a bully. I was told we were trying to circumvent the system. There was no intent for that. The only thing we were trying to do was get a head start on cleaning the spent fuel pool," unquote. The nuclear plant is on the east bank of the Hudson River in Westchester County and closed on April 30, 2021. The company currently plans to release the radioactive wastewater this September and in June and April 2024 and August 2025. The plant has been making similar water releases into the river for many years. Quote, "Just because these discharges have occurred for more than 40 years does not mean that they are the best disposal method," unquote, said a representative for Riverkeeper, a Hudson River preservation advocate, in January. Quote, "The ideal situation is zero radiation entering the Hudson River," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman reports for Spectrum News that New York's Department of Health launched a campaign May 1st to encourage residents to begin the two-dose vaccination series for Mpox, the disease formerly known as monkeypox. Quote, "Last year's Mpox outbreak took place during the spring and summer months in most impacted communities of men who have sex with men and immunocompromised individuals," unquote, Acting State Health Commissioner Dr. James McDonald said. Quote, "This year, while Mpox cases are extremely low in New York, cases continue to be diagnosed here in New York and around the globe, and there is still a risk of resurgence. We are taking proactive measures now to encourage those at risk to get fully vaccinated by getting both doses. Taking this measure of protection is a gesture of self-love and love for the communities in which you live," unquote. The virus can spread through sexual contact, and people in the LGBTQ+ community are considered to be more at risk. The state health department is beginning to run digital ads and social media alerts to encourage vaccinations. Read more about this story at Spectrum News. Mid-Hudson News reports that Ulster County Assemblyperson Sarah Hannah Shrestha is criticizing her fellow Democrat, Governor Kathy Hochul, for her bail rollback in the state budget. Shrestha said there is no need to modify the law, saying, quote, many cases, particularly low-level, get dismissed because of an epidemic of wrongful arrests, and poor people, people of color, and those with mental health issues have a higher likelihood of being caught up in a wrongful arrest. People waiting for their trial who have not yet been proven guilty and don't have money to pay bail are dying in jails due to negligence, and when they do survive, they come out with traumas that are impossible to heal, unquote. Shrestha also said the current law, quote, already gives judges discretion for bail-eligible cases, which include violent felonies and some nonviolent ones, unquote, and that judges, quote, exercise this discretion by determining whether bail is the least restrictive means to ensure the person returns to court, unquote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that Greene County is handing out $300,000 in grant funding to small businesses. The money comes from New York State in partnership with the Economic Development Corporation. The grants will range from $5,000 to $25,000 and go to businesses in Greene County with five or fewer employees. Greene County EDC Board Chair Mark Maragaglio said that small businesses are the fastest growing sector of the economy, local economy, saying, quote, access to capital is key to helping them create jobs and thrive in our communities, unquote. Businesses interested in applying for the multi-grant program should visit the Greene County EDC website for more information or contact Hannah at jhannahs@greenecountyny.gov. Read more about this story at Porcupine Soup. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, May 2nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 38 degrees in Tannersville to 46 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 50 degrees. Pollen levels are creeping back into medium territory. We can expect light scattered rain all day with a chance for a boom or two of thunder in the afternoon. A high of 53 happens at 2 p.m. Near dark, rain tries a fake-out by getting real light, then coming back in force tomorrow morning. We see a low of 41 degrees. A high of 52, and more rain happens all day on Wednesday. 43 degrees overnight takes us into a still soggy Thursday with a high of 55. And so far, it is looking like Friday will still be a little wet, but the weekend will be dry and comfortable. With the warming trend on the way, it's going to be a good time to get outside, plant that garden, fix that house, hike those trails. Get your supplies now while the rain has everyone at home. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:32 a.m., low at 7:53 a.m., high tide at 1:41 p.m., and low at 8:12 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 52 degrees. The tide strength will be very low, and it's going to be just low soon, medium next week, high the week after that, the one starting the 15th, and the end of this month will come back to a very low tide strength for anybody out there with varying levels of confidence. Sunset today will be at 7:40 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:46 a.m. Looking way up, we see we have a minor geomagnetic storm watch up and X-class flare chances are at 10%. Solar wind speed is currently 500 kilometers per second at 2.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 87. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
We love Roll Call, y'all. Boogie Down Productions, Rob Bass, Dana Dane, Molly Marr, Olatunji, Chuck D, Ray Charles, EPMD, EU, Alberta Hunter, Run DMC, Stetsasonic, Sugar Bear, John Coltrane, Big Daddy Kane, Salt and Pepper, Luther Vandross, McCoy Tyner, Biz Markie, New Edition, Otis Redding, Anita Baker, Thelonious Monk, Marcus Miller, Branford Marcellus, James Brown, Wayne Shorter, Tracy Chapman, Miles Davis, Force MDs, Oliver Nelson, Fred Wesley, Maceo, Janet Jackson, Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, George Clinton, Count Basie, M. Toomey, Stevie Wonder, Bobby McFerrin, Dexter Gordon, Sam Cooke, Parliament Funkadelic, Al Jarreau, Teddy Pendergrass, Joe Williams, Wynton Marsalis, Phyllis Hyman, Sade, Sarah Vaughan, Roland Kirk, Keith Sweat, Cool Moe Dee, Prince, Ella Fitzgerald, Diana Reeves, Aretha Franklin, Bob Marley, Bessie Smith, Whitney Houston, Dionne Warwick, Steel Pulse, Little Richard, Mahalia Jackson, Jackie Wilson, Cannonball and Nat Adderley, Quincy Jones, Marvin Gaye, Charles Mingus, and Mary Lou Williams. We want to thank you all for making our lives just a little brighter here on We Love Radio.
2023 new music from Hudson Valley-based musician Christopher Tigner. The album is called The Art of Surrender, and the track is called Any Way to Reach You. All right, we're now joined by Christopher Tigner, a composer, violinist, lecturer, software engineer, string arranger. You do a little bit of everything, I guess, huh?
I do a little bit of a lot of things.
And you're joining us today because you've got performances Friday in Catskill at the Avalon Lounge, and Saturday is in Troy at the studio. That's right?
Actually, Sunday is at Troy in the studio.
Oh, right.
I'm also lucky enough to play a kind of special set at Lodger, which is a really cool restaurant in Newburgh, and they have live music performances. I think that evening maybe booked up, but Sunday.
That's Sunday's Saturday? Troy.
Yeah, that's Saturday. And then back up to Troy at the studio for a relatively early 5 p.m. show.
And Christopher Tigner, maybe audiences hearing your voice right now aren't familiar with your work. You want to what kind of adjectives or genres do you put yourself in?
I mean, I try to leave most of that up to people like you, not to be a pain in the butt, but I'm a violinist, I'm a composer. I grew up playing classical music, of course, as a violinist, but also I grew up playing a lot of rock and roll. My musical tastes are pretty wide-ranging, but I'm interested in creating long-form, adventurous, heart-on-sleeve, dramatic really experiences for the live listener. This music really is very live. It really is about what one man can do up there with a violin and a lot of homegrown electronics. It makes for a really compelling live show. It's kind of the opposite of hitting spacebar on a laptop. I build the digital treatments, the processes for my violin. I build those effects myself. I'm a software engineer. I got into computers through music. And so a lot of, you know, everything I'm doing on stage is live. There's no loops, there's no tracks, but it's very rich. It's very orchestral. It involves a lot of live triggering, a lot of live violin processing. There's big, broad melodies. It's very melodic. I'm a violinist first and foremost, so it is extremely melodic. And, you know, it's there to grab you by the heart and not let go.
And I guess you have all kinds of classical references. But in terms of rock, is Dirty Three a touchstone for you?
I mean, certainly I listened to a ton of Dirty Three in college. You know, a lot of Warren Ellis' stuff was a huge inspiration. I played in many, many bands, of course. My career now is dominantly solo, but for years and years I played in bands that many of your listeners will probably know called Slow Six. We put out many records and did touring and all the rest of that stuff. So a lot of work in kind of the post-rock space, definitely typified most of my early career, I would say, and most of my early discography through that band and a couple other acts. Touring and doing string arrangement with bands like This Will Destroy You. A lot of work, you know, in that kind of space where instrumental rock in the tradition of Slint became more interested in bigger, longer arcs, in more dramatic instrumental gestures, which left room for classical ideas, classical instruments to come in. Of course, on the other side, you have Rachels and a lot of the kind of 90s, you know, so-called post-rock progenitors, right? So that tradition is for sure, for me, where the rock part of it started. You know, I mean, all the names that we are all familiar with, whether it's Tortoise or, you know, the Chicago Louisville scene is kind of how rock for me fused with classical music, whether, you know, for me, that might have been Avril Pair as a young man, and, you know, later on Stravinsky and a lot of classical stuff on that side that would be familiar, I think, to a lot of people who are in that or interested in that genre. But if you're not, then, you know, there's a lot of room for people, I like to think, who are not musicos, you know, because this really is very effective, emotionally effective music. You don't have to be a music nerd like us to really be able to find yourself in this space.
Yeah, is that what the most important thing for you is, the emotional creation, the emotion impact of the sound? Because the I guess violins and cellos both have a lot of emotional reverberation.
Yeah, I mean, of course, everything could be emotional, and that's like such a broad overloaded term in a lot of ways. But certainly for me, I'm trying to create art and kind of narrative experiences when you're there listening that really speak in a narrative way to you, which really resonates with some of the bigger ideas that you might just have about what it's like to spend time on this planet as a human being. I mean, my early training is as a writer, writing fiction and poetry. And so my idea of how to be an artist even today, it comes from that tradition of, you don't have to know anything about literature per se to be able to read Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, for example, and just really get something amazing out of it, be truly moved by it, right? So there, if you're really speaking to the human condition with your art, no matter what medium it is, then it has kind of a built-in accessibility because you've found a way as a creator to really tap into those shared human experiences. And, you know, very generally speaking, that's, of course, I think what so many of us are after. I'm no different in that way. I just happen to operate through this very vocal instrument, right? The violin is a very vocal instrument. So it really does have this kind of natural resonance that you can use melodically to cut to the core there.
And is this tour is for a new record that's not quite out yet, or is it?
That's true. There's a new record coming out in the fall. I guess it hasn't been officially announced, but there you go, Tom. But I'm playing music that is exclusively on that record and a little bit beyond that record, actually. So it's a great opportunity to come hear some stuff which isn't out yet for those people who are fans of my work. And of course, I have records and other things at the show that people, you know, you can go there and you can get all the music. You can hear the new stuff, and it will soon be out before other people have heard it. And if you want, pick up some of the old stuff while you're there.
I guess I was asking mostly to see how things have changed on the new record for you. What is different for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that I'm always trying to lean harder and harder to what I can do live as a solo performer on stage, making all the music live in front of you, and really make the most, again, like most compelling emotional narrative. So I'm really digging more, I think, into violin technique and big, you know, just digging into the instrument as a violinist and really trying to explore all the different ways you can pull really connective emotional narratives out of the instrument, and also thinking even more deeply about how to extend the instrument with the electronics. So really what I mean by that is, like, I build a lot of effects which take the violin and take the notes that I'm playing, take the lines, the melodies that I'm playing, and make other lines out of them that I can, like, play in counterpoint with what I'm playing. So it's really like this big extended instrument, almost like an organist, where I'm playing the violin with my hands. An organist will be playing with their hands, but also with their feet at the same time. So I have foot pedals that I use that take the sound of my violin and transform it while I'm playing. So I'm kind of playing a melody with my feet that actually is taking the sound of my violin and pitch shifting it and doing all sorts of other transformations that go along with what I'm playing while I'm playing it. So really trying to push the boundaries of that extended instrument in a way that just makes the music richer, makes the bigs bigger and the quiet parts more nuanced. You know, I'm always just trying to lean harder into getting the shapes to be more arched, more technicolor when you want to get big, and more moody and quiet and monochromatic when you want to go with that vibe. And how can you make a cohesive piece that maybe goes to all those places within one piece that feels natural, that doesn't feel forced, that really makes the highs feel high and the lows feel low in a way that, you know, works very naturally with the experience of the listener. So, you know, I pay close attention to form on this record in a way I don't think I have before. There are pieces that are 12, 15 minutes long, and there are, for the first time, pieces that are 1 minute long. That's very rare. So I have a couple little either side, and then a whole bunch of them around the 7 minute mark. But playing with scale is something that I think has been a particular focus of mine with the new record.
And tell us about your relationship to the Hudson Valley. I think you're based in Brooklyn now, but you used to be based here. Yeah.
Well, I don't think I was ever based there, except I did go to Bard College many, many moons ago, you know, to date myself. I've lived in New York City over half my life, I grew up in northern Jersey, not too far away from the city, but I went to undergraduate up at Bard and studied literature. I also probably took as much music while I was there. Bard is a really fascinating place, as many of your listeners will know. So I also took a year of organic chemistry and things like that. So I certainly spent a lot of time in the Hudson Valley. Certainly during that period, I was also kind of a snowboard bum for a while, traveling up to Vermont and back and doing a lot of things like that.
And you've played the Avalon before, right? Is that?
For sure, for sure. Played the Avalon before, and one of the owners, Liam Singer, and I were in a band, Slow Six, for some number of years.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, so I know Liam quite well. He's a dear friend of mine, and I'm quite proud of everything that they've achieved up there.
Liam Singer runs the Avalon Lounge for any listener that doesn't know who we're talking about.
Yep. Incredible human being and musician.
Yes, he did all sorts of great things when COVID struck up here community-wide, besides just running a great public space.
Yeah. Him and his wife, his family are really part of the heart of Catskill, in my opinion.
All right. Anything else you want people to know about these shows that you're playing in? Friday at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Saturday, is it in Newburgh? Where?
At Lodger.
At Lodger. And then Sunday is in Troy at the Studio.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, I mean, they're all kind of really good, rare opportunities to see what I do in a more intimate environment. You know, I'm lucky enough to play a pretty wide range of venues, you know, whether it's a small little 20 or 30 person or 40, whatever it is, person event, like a lot of these shows, and in other times in much bigger spaces, maybe opening for larger bands. So, but it's very fun to get in these kind of small spaces, you know, like Avalon, like the Studio, where you can really get right up in front. Like I said before, I'm always telling people at the shows, move up, because there's stuff to see. So when I play, you know, the audiences really enjoy, and I enjoy having them close. You know, now more than ever in the age of streaming, the live performance is increasingly more valuable, right? So it's really such a unique way to hear music, even more so, I think, in the sea of Spotify and singles and all that. It really is such a distinct way to hear music. This is a full range, by nature, multimedia, visual, audio event. You're going to come and you're going to see a human being in front of you really putting it together. This isn't me bringing my studio and hitting play. This is me practicing for years and years and years so I can come and try to do this stuff live in front of you.
And two notes on what you just said about the closeness and the streaming. The website says proof of vaccination is required for all shows.
That's a good question. I have that up kind of by default on my website through COVID. I actually don't know if that's technically still true for these shows. It might not be true anymore. I just put that up at the beginning of the pandemic because it was just ubiquitously true for all shows. But I don't know. Bring your vax card. I don't know if our vaccines even work anymore.
And
hope that everybody's smart enough to do them.
And secondly, for streaming, I don't know if I mentioned this when we were going back and forth to try to set up this interview, but we have a system at Avalon that streams all the shows there, only if the performers want. So you can always opt out if you have any reason to want. But we should have a live web stream if nobody objects, of the entire show Friday night at the Avalon Lounge. And I think we're going to try, if you do have the show on the web stream, to put it on the FM between 8 and 10 p.m. We have a window to broadcast it. So if that's okay.
I'm sure it is, and I will confirm with Liam, but I know that he's a huge fan, and you know, we're all a big fan of Wake Farm, so please let's get the word out.
Yeah, so any performer that doesn't want it just tells Liam and he won't press the button during that part of the cool set, and you can opt out. It sounds like people can see you in person Friday, May 5th at the Avalon Lounge, or tune in the web stream.
Yeah, and Avalon Lounge, like Earth and Sea, a really amazing artist off Cranky is going to be playing. A violinist from Troy, Connor Arm Brewster, is going to be coming down. So it's really going to be a compelling show. I really recommend folks spend some time with those artists as well.
All right, Christopher Tignor, thank you so much for joining us, and hope to see you on Friday at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Tuesday, May 2nd, at 3 p.m., the community will rally outside the Rensselaer County Jail to demand dignity, not detention. Joining us now is Tanya Matos, Director of Advocacy and Policy at the Envision Freedom Fund, formerly Brooklyn Community Bail Fund. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We appreciate you coming on. Let me get started by just saying the Rensselaer County Jail is the only New York State facility that has opted into the federal program to check inmates for immigration holds and turn them over to ICE agents. Can you tell us more about this relationship?
Yes. So you're correct in saying that Rensselaer County is the only county in New York State to willfully and voluntarily opt into the 287G contract. 287G contract is a contract with the county and ICE, basically that gives local police the authority to stop anyone on the street or in traffic and turn them over to ICE solely for being undocumented. So it is not the safest county in New York State, in our opinion. Nonetheless, we are going ahead there to make a point and to urge and to push for Rensselaer County and officials to end the contract there.
Now, this rally is to call attention to inhumane and abusive conditions at the Rensselaer County Jail. Can you give us some of the examples of the problems you've just mentioned?
Absolutely. So the jail itself is a jail that, as you may remember, held Miss Q from about 2 years ago. And we've heard from several people from the facility that there's inadequate medical care for anyone and everybody in the jail. It's just a jail that cannot sustain the amount of medical needs that exist and that people develop while they're in jail. Also, the jail does not give the best food. A lot of it is pretty horrible. We receive lots of complaints about the food. And most of all is the treatment from the guards there. The treatment from the guards there are, as you may remember the story from Ms. Q, that the guards were pretty abusive and would taunt the people that were detained there. They would call them names and, you know, be physical with them as well, and really made their life a living hell there. In addition to just serving time and being held for ICE, on top of that, you know, they were being abused by the guards there. So those are some of the conditions at Rensselaer County Jail. And yes, you're correct to say we're going there to make a statement about the facility and continue to expose what they do on an everyday basis.
As you mentioned, Ms. Q, and we know that community action has made a difference as shown by the release of Ms. Q from Rensselaer County Jail in December after protest of her treatment that you just mentioned under ICE detention. And while she has been re-detained, what would you like to see as an outcome from the rally on Tuesday?
Yes. Well, good news is that Ms. Q was released from detention. Once again, it was community that had to come together one more time to push for her release. And she was able to be released, though, you know, it was a little harder this time. It was much harder this time. But again, she's able to be with community. And she is still active and an activist. And what we're hoping to see from tomorrow's action is, one, we want to make sure that communities in Rensselaer County know, because we're doing this along with other organizations in the Troy community area. We want everyday folks to understand that the jail is abusive, is acting out in these ways people who are detained. We would love to see the passing of Dignity Not Detention, which is a bill that would end county contracts with ICE, and to completely put a stop to the 287G contract that Rensselaer is voluntarily opting into.
So beyond attending the rally on Tuesday, how else can listeners be engaged in these issues? What else can we do?
Yes, so there's plenty of local groups like Troy Sanctuary, Troy for Black Lives, like the DSA group that exists there in Troy. There's lots of groups doing amazing work in the community. You can also log on to our website, nydignitynotdetention.com, and you can find out how you can make your voice heard for the passage of Dignity Not Detention. You can also follow us on social media on abolishICE_NYNJ and send us a message if you'd like to be involved directly.
As I understand it, there's still a lot of stigma around incarceration and undocumented status. What is a common misconception that you would like to dispel about people involved in the so-called criminal justice system?
Yes. For one, I think some of the misconceptions that exist and the ideas that I think we have is that people in jail have to suffer, right, for whatever they committed, for whatever action that they took, may or may not have taken. Sometimes the criminal justice system is very plagued with mistakes. We've heard so many stories like that. But you know, this level of punishment that exists in these jails is extreme. It's to a very, very extreme situation where, you know, people get injured, people sometimes die. And they're forgotten. Honestly, during COVID, they were some of the last people that were remembered during the COVID crisis, that is still occurring and has occurred. And our worries in like environmental issues, like they're usually also the last people to be attended to. So, specifically for people that are in ICE detention, they are being held in detention, specifically Rensselaer County Jail. They're being held in detention for long periods of time, three months to 4 years almost for some people, for running a red light, for and for simply being undocumented. And so they're really paying the price for being immigrants in this country.
So rallies are not only a way for people to demonstrate their ideas, but they build community and energize people who may feel, as you said, isolated or ignored. So can you give other reasons why rallies are important tools for change?
Yes. I think people have this conception that I'm just going to go stand on the street and just yell and then that won't make any difference. But I have seen many, many instances where by being there and expressing yourself, taking the time out of your day to do that, to step out of your home to do that, it really sends a message to the people in power in your county that this is an important issue that they have to pay attention to. And I've seen really how organizing, how rallies really have changed the movements and have really made the difference. And for example, made the difference for Miss Q. You could be saving a life literally by being out there and speaking out about Rensselaer County. And yes, you're right. It does build community. I'm going to meet some amazing people, new people, and continue to connect and build these ideas and come up with solutions. Instead of saying we don't want something, maybe we can have more conversations now that we know each other a little better to come up with better solutions to what it currently exists.
And just quickly, as we're beginning to run out of time, is there any place where our listeners could find more information?
Yes, absolutely. So I mentioned that we have a website, and I'm sorry, it's nydignitynotdetention.org, not .com, nydignitynotdetention.org, and our Instagram. You can definitely find us at abolishice_NYNJ on Instagram. Send us a message there. And you can find more information about our campaigns and the details and some facts and information about the stats on our website.
Okay. Thank you, Tanya Matos, for talking with us today. Listeners, the rally is scheduled for this Tuesday, May 2nd at 3 p.m. at the Rensselaer County Jail, 4000 Main Street, off Burden Avenue in South Troy. Participants will meet in the parking lot of the Burden Ironworks Museum. And Tanya, can you please repeat one more time the two websites?
Sure.
I'm sorry, I see we're out of time. We'll put that information in our segment description when this is posted to our website. Thank you again, Tanya.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you.
Climate activists, teachers, and students rallied on Saturday outside the New York State United Teachers annual representative assembly in Albany, calling on the union leadership to follow through on the numerous resolutions passed by teachers at the local, state, and national level to divest the teachers' pension funds from fossil fuels. The protesters noted that it is morally wrong for the pension fund to seek to profit from fossil fuel companies that threaten the future of life on the planet. It's also a bad financial decision to invest in an industry that world leaders agree needs to be phased out. We hear from retired arts teacher Mary Finneran, Schenectady High School student Andy Ramnoth, retired school staff person and labor representative Candace Leiden, and Elisha Bacon of Mothers Out Front.
For example, how long before the last white Christmas in upstate New York? It rained a lot this past December. When will the spring chorus be diminished to the point of a silent spring? Not caused by DDT per Rachel Carson, but by climate change. 80% of the songbirds in this country have disappeared. Climate change is making deserts of many places and destroying and expanding shorelines in others. Fossil fuels play a major role, both those emitting CO2, but worse yet, those emitting natural gas, methane, CH4. My heart is torn every time I remember that about 5% of my NYSDA's pension comes from fossil fuels. Those same fossil fuels are destroying our children's future. If we don't act now and stop climate decimation, we will lose much of life on Earth. Rhetorically, NYSDA leaders claim to endorse fossil fuel divestment, but I can't find it mentioned on the NYSDA website. Basically, to quote Greta Thunberg, the climate youth champion, regarding leaders' lack of real climate concern and action, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. NYSDA in truth refuses to push NYSDA to protect the future of our teachers' students via divestment. We hear from our state legislators that NYSDA lobbyists have told them not to support the Teachers' Fossil Fuel Divestment Act, which would make it law that NYSDA divests from fossil fuels. Shame. Blah, 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 NYSDA. You have earned an F. You have failed our students. Do you not get that this is the existential crisis of our times? Existential as in many of our life forms, including many people, will cease to exist. The UNIPC states right now our current pace of action is not sufficient to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. Orrin Lyons, chief of the Onondaga Nation, asks, what about the seventh generation? Where are you taking them? What will you have? NYSDA, make up your failing grade by insisting that NYSDA divest from fossil fuels.
Next, Schenectady High School student Andy Ramnoth.
And I'm a senior at Schenectady High School. Over my 4 years at Schenectady, I've noted that the student experience at Schenectady's buildings is immensely dependent on the natural environment. From elementary playgrounds to middle school courtyards and even high school gardens, nature is an integral aspect of our education system. Nature is a required part of schools. in order for their functioning, and its presence brings joy to struggling students, teachers, and school faculty as a whole. The threat that the overuse of fossil fuels has on the health of nature and its role in schools is undoubtedly alarming. Global warming threatens the safety of plants in green spaces that rely on a consistent ambient temperature and a lack of environmental disasters like flooding, wildfires, and drought. Furthermore, global warming will contribute to a lack of comfortable learning environments. Nobody wants to learn in sweltering heat, and air conditioning in many cases is inaccessible for schools, and even exacerbate the climate crisis as a whole. It is unlikely that this knowledge is new to you, as countless instructors in standardized courses in their very own curricula consider the harmful effects of fossil fuels on the environment. So why is there hesitancy towards divestment of the very companies that profit off of fossil fuel usage? Divestment from the fossil fuel industry will show these companies that teachers and union leaders are not willing to sacrifice the very future generations that they teach and support for financial prowess. If divestment doesn't occur now, before this problem has reached a major tipping point, then when will action be forged? As a student interested in entering the education field and becoming a teacher, this topic is paramount. I yearn for a future of joyful jungles, beautiful beaches, and outstanding oceans. I hope that the schools of the future can reflect these natural features in their courtyards, fields, and greenhouses. However, if change doesn't occur, climate change will continue to grow without bounds, fueled by the accelerant that is the fossil fuel industry. Schools will not have sustainable courtyards, they will not have beautiful plants, and they most certainly will not have happy students and staff. To divest is to show that you care about the future that you as instructors spend your days developing. Divest such that these generations of the future can enjoy schools with the alleviating powers of nature.
We hear from Candace Lydon.
Thank you to the Tory Area Labor Council I've been part of for more than 30 years. The Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace for endorsing this rally and the Divest New York movement. I especially want to thank Mary Finneran for getting me involved in Divest New York, and a shout out to Ruth and Mark. Thank you very much for letting me be part of the group. Over 30 years ago, I began my career as a speech language pathologist.